make perfect arrangements for His pleasure.
Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sadrajatam Sahagana Lalitam Shri Vishakhanvitamsha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpataru Bhyascham Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaham Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabho Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna So today's chapter is entitled Wonderful Krishna. This actually reminds me of a wonderful delicacy which Prabhupada specially taught ISKCON devotees when ISKCON was newly being started. And the name of that delicacy is, I'm sure all of you know it, Simply Wonderful. It's made of milk powder and powdered sugar mixed together and rolled into sweet balls. And the taste of that is simply wonderful. And the name of it is also simply wonderful. And here Prabhupada has named this chapter as Wonderful Krishna. Actually the word wonderful, when you use it, actually denotes an exclamation. When you say that you want to appreciate somebody, when somebody has done something, then you say, oh, that's wonderful. And that is expressed by an exclamation mark. Actually, this chapter is like putting an exclamation mark after the last two chapters. The last two chapters are Krishna lifting the Govardhan hill and the Vrajavasis worshipping the Govardhan hill. So after that wonderful activity that has been performed, this chapter follows, which actually glorifies Krishna, and this glorification comes from the very Brajavasis who are his associates. I seek the blessings of all the Vaishnavas. Here the word is used, extraordinary activities. Actually, what's happening is a young boy, 7 years old, lifting a hill which is just baffling anybody's imagination. It's beyond imagination, beyond comprehension. Nobody can even expect this kind of an activity. And here is this little 7-year-old boy, so cute and charming, just doing this in his own sweet way. But the act was so captivating that at that moment of time the Vrajavasis were completely zapped by the charm of this little boy. They could not actually rationally think at that point of time. They were so absorbed in his beauty. They were so absorbed in his spectacular activity that were completely absorbed in just looking at him. And that is why it is explained that the gopis complain that Brahmaji's creation is defective because he has made these eyelids in such a way that they blink. So the moment when the eyelids blink, we cannot see Krishna. So this was the extent to which they wanted to drink in the beauty of the Supreme Lord. So then where is the question of their even giving a thought as to how this act could ever be possible? No. At that time they were completely absorbed, completely immersed, completely drowned in that particular dealings with the Supreme Lord. And it is only that after this Leela is over, when Krishna is asking the Brajvasis to return home and when they are going back to their normal routine and to their daily duties, then they start coming back to their senses. It is as if they were hypnotized. Then now they come back to their senses. And now they begin to wonder. And they begin to think, how is this such a young boy? How could he lift a hill? Now the question is coming up in their mind. Earlier the question was not there. They were completely absorbed. They were part of it. They were into the Leela. They were participants. So they were not viewing from outside. Now they are viewing from outside. And now they are raising this question. How come? How did this happen? And then a question is arising in their mind. If this boy can do such an activity, he certainly is not an ordinary person. Because an ordinary person cannot do this. Therefore, they use the word extraordinary. It's beyond the ordinary. And now the second question that is coming to their mind is, if he is so extraordinary, how is it he has taken his birth among us who are ordinary? Now, can you imagine Mukesh Ambani or Anil Ambani getting into a BST bus? How would that be? You are waiting in the local train, Churchgate station, and you sit, that next to you is Mukesh Ambani sitting there. How would you feel? So, how come he is here? He is not supposed to be here. It is that kind of feeling which is coming into their hearts. If this boy has been able to do such spectacular deeds, how is it he has taken birth amongst us? It's not possible. So then, now they decide who will resolve this issue. And of course they come to the conclusion that we should all go to Nanda Maharaj. Because he is the person who is really intelligent and who can really answer this question and solve the puzzle for us. It's a big puzzle. It's mystifying for them. They are not able to understand. So now they are approaching Nanda Maharaj for an answer. But as already explained, this particular activity is happening after the Govardhan Leela. So just to understand the full import of this activity, of this situation, let us briefly recapitulate this Govardhan Leela. What exactly happened over there? So, one day, little Krishna is just observing that his father and all the other Brajavasis, they are preparing for a huge festival. And as children are prone to be inquisitive, he is making these kind of questions to his father. He is asking, "Father, what is all this that's happening? What kind of preparations are going on? What kind of festival are we going to celebrate? Why so many arrangements are being made?" And these kinds of questions. And then he is asking the obvious question, "What is this festival all about? Why are you going to hold this festival? For whose benefit is it being done? And why is it being done?" And then he is also explaining to his father that why it is necessary to explain to him, "Don't dismiss me as a small boy. I am part of your family. So you should not have any secrets within the family." So this way, in a very charming way, he is persuading his father to answer these questions. And when his father says that, "My dear boy, we are preparing a festival to make an offering
to Indra, the god of rains, by his mercy we have rains, and only because of the rains our cows will get the green grass and we will be able to carry on our sustenance. That is, we live, we sustain on maintaining the cows and utilizing these cow products. So this is our sustenance. So for this we are dependent directly on the controller, who is Indra. So we are doing this particular activity to appease him. Now Krishna takes on a different role. Of course, all camouflaged as a young little boy. So now he speaks something which you may not expect a boy to speak. But yet, as I told you, because of his potency, he is completely overshadowing them and they are unable to understand that how could this boy speak such a thing. But rather, they are drawn into the conversation. So he says, he is explaining the Karma Mimamsa philosophy. What is this Karma Mimamsa philosophy? It is actually an atheist philosophy with a belief in reincarnation. Atheist means it does not give any place for God in the working of this universe. So this is explaining how the universe is working, how things are happening in nature, keeping God out of the picture. That means Krishna says, you perform your role, you perform your activities, and the demigods who are appointed as different departmental heads are bound to supply you according to the activities which you do. So they have no choice. But then when this point is mentioned by Krishna, Nanda Maharaj, as a senior, as a father, is explaining to his little son. But he says, it is not enough just to do the work. One must also please the controller who is giving you the results. And here the controller happens to be Indra, the demigod. So therefore, we have to please him. That is why we are doing this. It is not that I do the work and I get it. No, but there is a person who is giving you. So you have to please him. That means he is bringing the personality into the picture. So the Karma Mimamsa philosophy says, if you work, the reward comes. Nobody can stop it. It eliminates God. The lawmaker and the controller are not in the picture. Simply the law is considered. The law is, you sow, you reap as you sow. So there is a person behind who is making this work. That aspect is taken away. Now Krishna begins his argument. He says, but then, as you explained, only if you work, you will get the reward. So therefore, work is supreme. How can the controller give you the reward if you don't work? So then again he says, work is supreme. And to explain this point, he gives a very beautiful example. He says, that if you worship Indra, then you are acting like an unchaste woman. Because he is comparing the jiva to be an unchaste woman, or a woman, the jiva to be a woman, and Indra is like the paramour, and the work is like the husband. So the woman has to love the husband. She has to serve the husband. She need not serve the paramour. So this is how he is presenting the picture in front of his father. He says that if you are offering this worship to Indra, then you become an unchaste woman, because actually it is work which is supreme. So you are wedded to your work. In short, he is giving the philosophy, work is worship, which is an atheistic philosophy, which is not the Bhagavad philosophy. But he is deliberately doing this. Why? Because he wants to incite Indra. There is a whole plan behind this. And since he is using the word work, Prabhupada has nicely explained the meaning of the word work as distinguished from service. He says, work is that for which you expect something in return. You work for the whole month, you want salary at the end of the month. That is fruitive results. But service is done out of love, without an expectation in return. That is the difference between work and service. And therefore, bhakti is not defined as work, but bhakti is defined as devotional service. Service and devotion. That is the difference. And then he advances one more argument. He says, as per varnashram, the Vaishyas do cow protection. And actually in this material world, everything is under the control of the three modes. And rains are controlled by the mode of passion. So where is Indra? He is again eliminating Indra. He is deliberately doing this to incite Indra. So he is propounding the atheistic Sankhya philosophy, which is a mechanistic philosophy. And actually, this is the philosophy which is in work today. Modern science is actually based on this mechanistic philosophy. That means everything happens mechanically. Eliminate the doer. Eliminate the personality behind it. Just say, like for example, how it is explained in modern science when they go to school. The sun shines, the water of the sea evaporates, it turns into vapor, it becomes cloud, the cloud goes up, it gets condensed because of atmospheric climatic conditions, and it comes down as rain. Where is Indra in this? Where is the controller? Where are the demigods? They are not there. But yet you still find that in cities like Bombay, which is completely, and the entire economy for India is dependent on rain. If 1 year the rains do not happen in time, then immediately even government sponsored yajna starts. People start worshipping and praying. All churches, all mosques, all temples, so many religious organizations, even schools, children, everywhere people are praying for rain. At that time, why suddenly prayers crop up? Because now they know it is beyond their capacity. Now why is the water not condensing? Why are the clouds not pouring down the rain? It's a mechanistic philosophy. No, but it doesn't work. So Krishna is now taking, actually propounding that mechanistic philosophy. And then he is telling, oh father, we dwell in the hills and the forest, not in the cities. So let us worship the hill. So now he is diverting the worship to the Govardhan hill. Now Nanda Maharaj says, okay, after worshipping Indra, we will worship the hill. So it has gone in a very systematic manner. It is not that Krishna just said and immediately they started. No, a very systematic approach has taken place. Then Krishna puts down his foot. He says, no. Use the same paraphernalia, no Indra Puja. He is very firm about it. A child, but yet he is so firm. This is proof that even as a child, his potency is undiminished. And Nanda Maharaj relents. There is a point to be noted here. Nanda Maharaj is actually a king. He is a wise person. He is a worldly man. He is responsible. He is elderly. How could he be misled by a child? This is the point that we have to note. Though the Vrajabasis are reciprocating with Krishna in the five rasas, but being pure devotees, highly elevated souls, they have spontaneous love for Krishna. Outwardly, they indulge in worldly behavior. Vatsalya ras, Madhurya ras, Sakhya ras, etc. But their consciousness is completely riveted on Krishna. It is their whole aim of their life is simply to please the Lord, to please Him. Though they behave and act in such a way as though Krishna is not God, but He is one of them. But yet, their consciousness, it is spontaneously coming from the inner core of their being. This is a mark of a pure devotee. See, it is difficult to recognize God even if He can come in person. Very often people ask this question, why is God not appearing in front of us? But the answer is, we don't have the qualification to know Him even if we see Him. And to explain this point, it is explained with the help of a nice example. There was an annual college day celebration. And there was one student who was doing a remarkable act. He was acting in one of the dramas and his role was superlative. Everybody was applauding that particular character. He was acting, pouring his heart into the role. And there was a lot of applause going around. And all the students were asking among themselves, who is this boy? Who is this student? Konte saal ka ye? Which year is he? Which class is he from? And everybody, it was a big question because his makeup and everything was so perfect that nobody could recognize his true identity. But there was one girl sitting among the audience and she loved him. And she was smiling to herself. So it is love which reveals the identity. And the others were externally trying to identify, they were not able to. Because she had that love for him, she could immediately see through all the disguise and she could go to his true identity. So this is the mark of a pure devotee. In whatever form, in whichever place, however the Lord may appear. But a pure devotee's consciousness is so fixed on the Lord that his presence, they can sense it. They can immediately make it out. Oh, he is my Lord. They don't need an introduction. They don't need to be told. The announcement is not required. Introduction is not required. Unless one sees this undercurrent, the Vraja pastimes will not be relishable. Otherwise one may think, these are all such mundane dealings. Why are you describing this? In fact, it will become mystifying and complex. One has only two choices in this world. Either you can be a yogi or you can be a bogi. Bogi means one who is enjoying the senses. Yogi means one whose consciousness is entirely fixed on the Lord. These are the two extremes, and in between is the whole spectrum of choices that one has. But these are the two predominant choices that are available. So then the Govardhan Puja is performed. Indra is incited. He gets angry. And it is explained, Indra is too proud. He is not able to see that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. Just see this. The Vrajavasis, who are simple hearted folks, are able to know it in the core of their heart, but externally they are not showing it. Externally they are dealing with him as if he is one of them. But here is Indra, a demigod, highly appointed official to administer the universe. And he is in ignorance. He is not aware that this young boy is Krishna. So, he is actually denouncing. He says, Vachalam Balisham Sthabdam Agyam Cha Panditamaninam. That means, Vachalam means talkative. Balisham means childish. Sthabdam means arrogant. Agyam means ignorant. And Pandita Maninam, and he thinks that he is very learned. So he is explaining, what is all this happening over here? And then he says, Krishna Martyam Upashrityam. That means Krishna is an ordinary human being. Martyam means one who dies. He is an ordinary human being who is caught in the cycle of birth and death. And these people are worshipping him, taking shelter of him. Krishna Martyam Upashrityam. Gopamye Chakru Apriyam. And he says, these cowherd men are displeasing me and just going and worshipping Krishna. So he is terribly angry now. Indra is so angry, so upset. And then he decides to unleash the Samvartaka clouds. It is like overkill, using a cannonball to kill a sparrow. Even this Brijavasis are ordinary simple folks. If at all he could have sent a torrential rain. But no, his anger is so deep that he is using the rains of annihilation to destroy the entire Vrajdham. Because his ego has been so badly wounded because his worship has been taken away. Actually, Krishna could have protected the Vrajvasis even without lifting the Govardhan hill. What is not possible for the Lord? There was no need for him to lift the Govardhan hill. Like Lord Ram could have killed Ravan just with a heart attack. There was no need to fight the war at all. But in the same way, Krishna could have easily protected the Vrajvasis by his mystical opulences. But then why did he lift the Govardhan hill? Because he wanted to reveal to Indra and also to the Vrajvasis that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he wanted to rectify Indra more than revealing to Indra. He wanted to rectify him. Actually, Krishna was protecting from all sides. Under the hill, he was protecting the Vrajavasis. And above the hill, he was protecting Indra. He was protecting Indra from fall down due to his pride. And he was protecting the Vrajavasis from the wrath of Indra. So his one act was giving all-round protection, below and above, both ways. That is his supreme potency. It is explained that Krishna has no friends, he has no enemies. He is equipoised and equally disposed to everybody. Samoham sarva bhuteshu name dvesho asti na priyaha. Yetumam bhajantya bhaktya mayite tesham chapyaham. So that is being displayed in this. Krishna is not inimical to Indra when he is doing this act. Neither is he favoring the Vrajavasis. The Vrajavasis are taking shelter of him, he is reciprocating with them. And Indra is getting deviated because of his pride, so he is rectifying Indra. In one stole he kills many birds. That is the multipotency of the Lord. Multitasker, we can say. We can know Krishna only by his mercy and not by our might or not by our effort. To know Krishna, we need his mercy. So, this point, I'm just using a few lines of poetry to bring out this point. Have no pride. Fight your might with all your might. Fight your might with all your might until the dust of the ground you bite. But will not gain that divine sight of the Lord Almighty's face so bright. By his will only can he be seen, and by his mercy alone can he be known. So bend down to his glorious will, and with his love your heart do fill. And if you have some doubt left still, to convince you, he'll lift the hill. The Lord is gentle and so kind, to him surrender, have no pride. So this is the Lord's supreme potency, and he will not tolerate pride in the heart of his devotees. The minute he sees it, he immediately takes action to rectify that. That is his kindness. Our problem is, we have a mountainous ego, and we are crushed under that mountain of ego. This is our real problem. Only the Lord can lift that mountain of ego and save us. So he displays his power in a way we can see and know. Otherwise we will never know what is his potency. So if he says, I can save you from the biggest of troubles, we still have our doubts. So here he is giving a graphic description, graphic view. Physically he is lifting the hill and showing, see, I am capable of doing this. Lord Ram did the same thing. When Sugriv was doubting whether he can kill Vali, he shot an arrow through 7 trees. And one single arrow went piercing all the 7 trees and then came back. And then Sugriv was convinced. So the living entities are like doubting Thomases. They are not able to recognize the Lord or even know his potency. And sometimes the Lord gives a display of his potency. So this is one such instance when he is giving a display of his potency. And when we know how great is he, and also know how small we are, then the result is we automatically become humble. The Lord's mercy is like water, and water always will flow from a high level to a low level. So when we become humble, then we become qualified to receive His mercy. Because it will flow from high level to low level. Another example we can explain this is quicksand. When one is stuck in the quicksand, what happens? By your own effort, you cannot come out. In fact, if you start getting agitated and try to save yourself, what is the result? You start sinking deeper. And what is it that takes you deeper? Your own weight. So pride is like our weight. And that will actually drag us down. Our pride will drag us down. So for that, what is required is an external force is required to lift that person. And the Lord very mercifully, who is not in the quicksand, He is outside it. He throws a rope. And all that we have to do is catch that rope. And that rope is chanting of His holy name. And catching the rope means we simply have to chant His holy name. And the rest is up to Him. We have to only cry out for His mercy. And the rest is up to Him. He will pull us out. By our own effort, we cannot come out. That is the process of potency of chanting. When we chant, we are only crying out for His mercy. Actually, we are not able to accomplish anything. But everything is accomplished by His mercy. He hears our chant and He reciprocates by pulling us out. So, bhakti is a process which is not dependent on our effort, but it is dependent on the grace and the mercy of the Lord. And that is why it is so powerful. And that is why it is sure to work. Because our potency is doubtful. The Lord's potency is certain. That's the difference. So chanting and crying out for mercy of the Lord, only He can save us. Our effort is to call out, to chant His holy name. And even today, there are people who dismiss the Govardhan Lila as a myth. Once I went and met a philosopher. Somebody invited me. Because this person was coming to the temple and he was getting attracted to the ISKCON philosophy. But yet he was stuck to the old teacher. And he said, but no, somehow I am deeply impressed by this personality. So, I said, so call him to the temple. Let him come and see for himself. He said, no, he's a very old man. So he cannot come. So then I took permission and I went and just met him. And I was amazed to hear this man. No, rather, yes. This man was speaking like this. He said, Krishna was not real, He never lifted the hill. These are all simply fairy tales. So there are such people and they are fabricating their own stories. So then, in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, shloka number 9, there is a beautiful verse where Krishna explains, Kanaham dvishitam kruran samsareshvanaradhaman kshipamya asrajam ashubhan asurim evayonishu. He says, for those who are envious, I cast them into hellish and demonic species of life. So we have a choice. Either we surrender to the Lord or we get cast into demonic species of life. These are the two ends of the spectrum, and if one is intelligent, one will make the right choice. It's so simple. So Krishna has performed so many brain-teasing pastimes. But out of all these pastimes, the Govardhan Lila is the most supreme. And today we just briefly discussed about the Govardhan Lila, just to understand why Krishna is wonderful. Everybody knows God is great, but only an Acharya like Prabhupada can explain how great is God. Hare Krishna. Thank you.